morning, and welcome to Fiber Hooligan. I'm your host, Benjamin Levesey, and for the next hour or so, I'd like to invite you to grab your cup of coffee, tea, or Diet Dr. Pepper, if that's your beverage of choice, and settle in for the 62nd episode of Fiber Hooligan. For those of you who are wondering who the heck I am the CEO of XRX Inc., home of Knitters Magazine, XRX Books, and Stitches Expos. If you are tuning in for the first time, Fiber Hooligan is a podcast hosted by yours truly and dedicated to bringing you interviews with the best of the fiber arts world, including experts and designers in the crafts of knitting, crochet, spinning, weaving, as well as anything else that I think is interesting. I want to make sure that I thank the good folks over at Prime Publishing. Prime Publishing is the exclusive media sponsor for Fiber Hooligan, and this show is brought to you by AllFreeKnitting.com, your source for great knitting patterns. If you haven't checked them out yet, please head on over to allfreeknitting.com to get in on the fun. I want to welcome the new listeners today. Thank you for tuning in and trying out the show. I hope you enjoy it. I can't wait for us to get to know each other better. And of course, I'd like to welcome back our regular Fiber Hooligan listeners. Your ongoing support means so very much to me. We do have another sponsor for today's show. Today's show is also sponsored by Darn Good Yarn. Darn Good Yarn is a premium source for high-quality, fair-trade, unique yarns from around the world. Their specialty is recycled silk yarn, and their mission is to provide reasonably priced, high-quality yarn that helps women in India and Nepal and also gets rid of waste. You can learn more about Darn Good Yarn and see their beautiful fibers online at darngoodyarn.com. And if you're anywhere close to Hartford, Connecticut, from October 9th through the 12th, you can meet the dynamic Darn Good Yarn team and see their wares on the Stitches East market floor. Okay. My guest today is a brilliant and prolific knitwear designer and author. She has been designing knitwear for the yarn industry and 7th Avenue for over 30 years. Her book, Designing Knitwear from Taunton Press, has been in print since 1990. Her most recent book, Finishing School from 6th and Spring, was chosen by Amazon to be one of their top 10 craft books of 2011. She lives in her favorite city, Providence, Rhode Island, with writer and book reviewer Paul DeFilippo. She is an avid gardener and also works daily in her family's business, Maps for the Classroom. She has been a collaborator and friend of the family for decades, and I'm so pleased to finally have her on the show. I am speaking of one of the most talented people in the fiber arts industry, my friend, Deborah Newton. Deborah joins us this morning from Providence, Rhode Island. Good morning, Deborah, and welcome to the show.
Good morning, Benjamin. It's a delight to talk to you. I haven't seen you in, too long.
It has been too long. It has really been too long. But, you know, we'll get to see each other soon. We'll talk about that later, too. But it really is wonderful to talk to you. I mean, it's so funny. I always think about it. You have known our family for so long. And I think it was, three and a half years ago where you and I met for the first time.
Yes, we met when I gave the opening speech at Stitches in Hartford. And I have known Elaine Alexi since the beginning of my career. I started freelancing in 82, and I think I may have met them just a couple of years after that. And so to meet you finally closes the circle, right?
Well, I hope you weren't disappointed. I mean, People like Alexi, David, and Elaine, they have quite a bit of presence. And unlike me, they actually have fiber art talent. I'm good at radio. I have a face made for radio, so that's what I do, and do the whole thing. But you're actually very talented. How are things in Providence, Rhode Island today?
Beautiful day, and it's always a beautiful day when you have good work. And I work with my family, and also I work at home. So, I love to work, and I think that any day that I can get up and still be curious and creative and anxious to get on, moving on to a new project is a great day.
Well, those are words to live by. And of course, you know, I'm a worker myself. So let's get right into the interview because I can't wait to share you with the Fiber Hooligans. For those Fiber Hooligans that may have not heard about you before, I'm going to ask you a very boilerplate question. Deborah Newton, who are you and where did you come from?
Well, I'm Deborah Newton, and I live in Providence, Rhode Island. I'm a native Rhode Islander. I've lived here all my life in the state of Rhode Island. I love it. And Providence is, despite the fact that I've traveled widely, still my favorite city. It's a small townish type of city in New England, and I just love it. And I went to Rhode Island College. I was not trained in knitwear, even though I became a knitwear designer. I was not trained to be one, but I did work in college in theater, and I worked with a very talented costume designer, both during the time that I was in college and afterwards. And her name was Barbara Matheson. She's from the Boston area, and she was really an inspiration to me. I learned a lot about garments. I was already interested in garments, and I learned a lot about construction and, you know, the period history of different costumes, and I've always had a fascination for clothing. So I think that what makes me different from other people in the field, perhaps, is that I do have this tremendous interest in garments, and I always have. So I'm not just a knitter, but I'm a garment maker, and I see myself in that tradition. I'm somebody who uses knitting to create garments. I also have a side that a lot of people don't know about. Every day from 9 to 1, I work with my family, and my family has a mat business. We design and publish educational mats. And it all came about in a strange way because my brother, who's 10 years younger than me, Jason, he studied geography in school and cartography, and he had been doing workshops in schools teaching kids how to be cartographers and learning about maps when he graduated from school. And he had an idea for a business where he would create these kind of hands-on maps where kids drew in the details and became cartographers themselves. So he said, "Deb, help me get this business off the ground." And I said, "Jason, 2 weeks. I'll help you 2 weeks." And now it's 25 years later, and it's a family business, and my nieces work there. My sister-in-law, Leslie, my sister, who's recently retired, worked with us for many, many years. So I do that 9 to 1 every day, and then the rest of the day is pretty much pursuing all of my interest in knitwear and writing and, you know, sharing some of my experience more recently with the knitting public.
Well, that's a good overview. I'd like to step back and talk about these pieces, if you don't mind.
I'd be happy to.
Great. All right, so this is very curious to me. When we first met, I did not know about this other half of your life, and it truly is about half your life. You split your day into this. Family business, of course, I understand the nature of the family business. But the map thing, okay, there's a lot of map products. And for our Fiber Hooligan listeners that may not quite understand what it is that you do and the market you sell into, can you tell us a little bit more about the company itself as well as, you know, the family dynamic?
Sure, sure. And everyone always says to me, "Well, how do you work with your family?" And actually, you know, when you begin working with your family, and you probably know this, Benjamin, you have patterns of behavior that you share outside of the workplace. So you bring those to the workplace, and you kind of have to learn to discard them and become fellow workers. But my brother and I had a deep interest in education, and we still do. We feel that this part of our lives is a way of contributing to culture and education. And we sell, and our business is called Maps for the Classroom. And we started out with about 10 different maps. They're large desktop size maps and 16 by 20 inches. And the kids draw in geographic details, label, draw in rivers and mountain ranges. And they become, by filling in the topography and the political features of the map, they become cartographers. And not only do they learn about geography, but they learn other kinds of skills as well. So we sell to schools nationwide, and we have for 25 years, and it's a real old-school, non-digital product, although we have devised digital products over the years to keep up with the marketplace and the changing culture. But we're very proud of the fact that we have, our product has been a presence in so many schools and for so many students, and we actually had a student teacher who said that she was using them because she had used them in school when she was a kid. So that, you know, it's very rewarding for us. In the workplace, our day is made up of a lot of different things. We're always designing new maps. We have a lot of history maps, 13 colonies, ancient history, trails west, you know, westward movement, all kinds of typical maps like continents, world, states, et cetera. But, you know, we've had to do a lot of research and we've learned a lot ourselves by doing it. And I think that kind of work carries over, or you have to have an interest and a curiosity about things in order to make a business work. You have to also be interested in the product, not just in the selling of it. So it's been a very interesting experience for us.
And your product, you and I spoke before, your product is primarily print. You have a digital version, but
yeah.
you found your niche still in this digital age into print pieces. I think that's really fascinating.
It is, because the thing that we worried about for so long, that we were kind of Luddites and we didn't really know much about the digital world, and we did have to learn a lot, basically, but we found out that there still is a strong need for hands-on products where children are still connecting with handwriting and drawing and illustration. The things that recently there was a New York Times article about this. When you do something by hand, and this applies to knitting too, handwriting skills, illustration skills, you're using a different part of the brain than you use when you are using a computer. So we are kind of proud that our product is still in demand and that we're filling a niche that has kind of been abandoned by a lot of companies.
Well, that's neat. And as I understand it, it's not just you and your brother as far as family. There's a lot more family in the business, too.
Well, my nieces, who are both in college now, have worked with us summers, you know, during the summer, since they were little kids doing things, you know, tasks. And now they're just as involved. And sometimes they know more about digital things than we do. So we've come to rely on them for that. I don't know if they'll end up working in the business ever the way Jason and I have continued to do so. But, you know, it's been wonderful having them there. And my brother's wife, Leslie, is our bookkeeper, and she takes care of all the business side of things, which is good because Jason and I are just the creative people. But, you know, I love my family, and I've had such a great time being able to work with them. So that's a side of me that a lot of people don't know.
Well, it's really interesting. And so this is half your day. I mean, you get up in the morning, you go do this thing, and I know you put everything into it. And then in the middle of your day, you come home and you put on a different hat. And it is, I'm sure, as disciplined as being at the office. And of course, I'm talking about you being a knitwear designer and published author. I'd love for you to talk about kind of the sensibility. You and I have had many conversations about the way you work. And I think the way that I would define you is a purposeful knitter. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, Benjamin, that's such a great word for me. I'm totally full of purpose. Because I have to shift gears midday, very often, you know, I'm in one place, my mind is one place, and then I come home and I have this totally different field to play in. And so I haven't got a lot of time, so I have to be very, you know, focused and very dedicated to what it is I'm doing that day. And that's not to say that I always succeed. I'm a person who likes to juggle a lot of things at the same time, but whenever I'm working on one thing, I'm totally with that thing. And I spend a lot of time in preparation, and also since I juggle a lot of different projects at the same time, I might be working on anywhere from 2 to 10 projects in a month. I have to kind of, in my own kind of haphazard way, attend to each one of those at least once a day or twice a day, if you know what I mean.
Oh, I do. And, you know, for fiber hooligans that are listening to that, 2 to 10 does not mean that she's actually knitting 2 to 10 or designing 2 to 10. There's process. There are different stages of the process.
Yeah.
And one of the things that you're so well known for, at least in our world, is, I want to lay this process out to you folks. An editor like Rick Mondragon from our magazine will make a call for submissions, and it'll be a rough idea. And he, especially with Deborah, wants her to do her thing. But there's a, I don't know how you call it, almost a mock-up that comes in. It's a set of cards with some swatches on it, diagrams that give the editor from the designer an indication of what this is going to be when it grows up. Now, I have to say, You do this better than anybody else in the world. People just go gaga over this, and I think that this is not the first time you've heard that.
No, I know that I take a lot of pleasure in my presentations. The design presentation that precedes any project for me is not only fun to do, but it's totally functional. I want my client, Rick, for example, or another editor, or someone at a yarn company who wants me to do a design, I want them to know exactly what they're getting. So I do a large swatch. Often the swatch incorporates edgings or buttons or even a pocket. The swatch, as I always say, tells the story of the sweater to come. And for someone like me who doesn't have a lot of time, not only is this a presentation for the editor, but it's a way of me consolidating my thoughts, my ideas, making sure that everything I'd like to do in that sketch can be realized in the swatch. You know, anyone can draw a beautiful sketch, and but if it isn't makeable, then to me it's useless. So I have to coordinate in my presentations. And all of this takes time. It's above and beyond the actual making of the sweater. I want the sizing of the sweater to be apparent, the way it fits, its silhouette. I also want the fabric to be completely obvious. And what are the details? Those are the fun parts, and everybody enjoys seeing those. So I know that people have enjoyed my presentations over the years, but I've enjoyed making them too, Benjamin.
Well, you're so good at it, and I think I've told you before that you should actually teach a class in this. You're so good at this because these are not just presentations. Many times, what I would call them is proof of concept.
Yeah, and they're fun little, almost like fashion dioramas, you know, where you've got a drawing of the sweater, and I like the girl to look pretty, or the boy, whoever is wearing it, and I like the swatch to be beautiful, and I like the concept to be clear. So for me, it's kind of like paper dolls, you know. How do you dress a doll? How do you dress a person? It's a miniature look into what the project could be. And, you know, I don't always sell every presentation either. I mean, I might do a presentation and send it in, and it never gets made. So that, in one way, is why I like to enjoy making those presentations, because even if nothing comes of it, I've had the pleasure and the knowledge and the experience that comes from working it out.
Well, again, they're very good, and I would have to believe that given the care and the attention to detail, I mean, a lot of attention to go. Again, you're talking about the silhouette. You're talking about a swatch that defines what the stitch pattern is going to be. Mm-hmm. You're talking about an explanation and, again, a proof of concept that this will size up correctly, which mm-hmm. is very important to editors. I would imagine that your ratio of having your stuff accepted is actually pretty high.
It is, and I came up in print, so this is the kind of presentation that works in print as opposed to selling your own designs online. I still haven't ventured into that area. But I want to say, Benjamin, that my job is as a designer is all about pleasing the client. Even though I please myself by the presentations and I enjoy what I do, I make sure that the sweaters that I design are things that I believe in and I enjoy making. I am a person who believes that I am there to fulfill the needs of my client. And I think that's probably why people like to work with me, because I want to know what it is they need. I like to fill people's needs. I find it kind of a puzzle to be solved, to meet the needs of other people. And that's what I think a designer does in the best possible sense.
Well, I agree. And again, this is part of why I consider you to be the ultimate professional in this industry, because you're regimented, your presentation is excellent. And then when it comes time to have that mind melt with the editor or whoever's contracting you for the piece, there is no ego in it. You put the ego online, and what you're trying to do is fulfill a combined vision that makes everybody happy. And that's what makes you happy. And I think that's just wonderful.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I think that when people start out as designers, they feel they want to please themselves. They want to express themselves. They want to say, this is me. But really, a designer in the clearest sense is somebody who serves the culture. Whether you're a furniture designer or you're a knitwear designer or you're someone who does graphics, in the end, what you're doing is following the cues of your culture, being interested in them, being interested in the people who are the consumers of your product, and also helping those who, you know, manifest your product, those people who bring it to life. In my case, it's always an editor. So I'm always sort of indebted to an editor for bringing my things to life and making them glow on the page and, you know, arranging things so that what I do looks good. So I'm just a small part of that process. And I think as a designer grows, that conception becomes clearer. In the beginning, it's all about us. But as we grow as designers, we realize that it really isn't all about us. It's about our place in the culture and what we do, and maybe our particular set of skills. My set of skills isn't the same as someone else's. I'm more of a classicist. I'm not a free-form designer. I'm not somebody who does one-of-a-kind type things. I you know, I'm into exploring the garment and all its possibilities.
Yes, you are. And your sensibility aside, again, I want to run back to your professionalism. Your professionalism shows in the way that you were, too.
You should see my desk. Benjamin, you should see my desk. You wouldn't believe I was a professional.
The desk is really what I wanted to get to, because I think how you knit and where you knit and where you design would be a very interesting thing for you to tell the Fiber Hooligans. Would you mind talking about that a little bit?
No, not at all. I always shock people. I know this is true. When I say that I only knit at my desk, it is the only place where I knit. And my life hasn't been gifted with the space in order to sit on the couch and knit something for myself. I don't knit for myself. I don't own sweaters. All the sweaters that I design go out into the world. And so the knitting that I do, as you say, is very purposeful. I sit at my desk and I figure something out. I combine patterns, or I chase a garment shape, or I'm working very deliberately in a short period of time. And also, for those people who don't know, when you work in print and you contribute designs to magazines, you rarely have more than 2 or 3 weeks to complete a design from beginning to end. So I don't knit all of the sweaters. I'm a very prolific designer. I say that with no, a fact. I just have to be busy in order to make a living. And I work with many knitters. I have for many years. Some of them I've worked with for as many as 25 or 30 years. And we together get an instruction together. We work on the swatching. We're very careful about that. We get the sweater done in 2 or 3 weeks, and I always do all the finishing. So when I'm juggling that many projects, I have to be purposeful. I don't have any time to waste, and I want to enjoy it too. I want to have fun. So making good decisions, swatching carefully, and I always hear those groans about swatching. When you swatch carefully, you never make a mistake. You know the puzzle pieces of your design before you begin it. And I don't have any time to waste. Life is short. I still have more ideas to chase and pursue and go after. So I don't take any chances. I do a lot of upfront planning. So I am indeed very purposeful.
Well, you are. And part of that is, again, you're juggling. You've got two mm-hmm. really full-time careers, and you're also trying to have a life as well.
That's right.
you're a gardener, and we should take a minute to talk about Paul, because, you know, Paul's a big part of your creative world.
Yeah, and you know, all of this life that I do is totally impossible. It's a lifestyle, and you can't do it with someone else who's not in sync with you. Because when you work on deadlines, who understands deadlines in this culture except another freelancer? So Paul and I have been together since we were in college, and we both set out to have a creative career. I wanted to be a freelance designer, and he wanted to be a writer, and we started out in 1982 together with that in mind, and we've been doing it ever since. Paul is a science fiction writer. He's also a book reviewer. He has a regular column for the Barnes & Noble website where he reviews books every week. And he's written over 30 books, mysteries as well as science fiction. And he's the one who really drives our life. I'm the one who's, I say lazy. I'm not lazy, but I'm the one who would meander around and not get things done. But Paul keeps the structure of our life together. He is the one who is more organized. We have kind of a yin-yang relationship. He's the organized one and the one who always is on top of everything, and I'm kind of more dreamy and more pursuing of ideas, and not that he doesn't pursue ideas, but I can daydream, whereas he doesn't. Because we both work on deadlines all the time, we have to kind of fit our creative fun together into our day. I mean, in the morning we have a read aloud thing for 10 or 15 minutes after breakfast where we do a we read a nonfiction book. We've been doing this for years and years. We watch a movie every night at 10 o'clock. We listen to a new CD every day at 7 o'clock, and I do yoga for an hour. We have pets. We're very close to our families. We have a very rich family life and a very rich day-to-day routine. The trouble with freelancing is it's deadly if you don't have these joys. And so Paul and I just happen to be in sync, and he is the reason that I can be so successful at what I do.
Well, that's very sweet of you, and I think you make a good point. The idea is, all right, so you're freelancers, which means you never turn it off. And the downside of that is if you then don't carve out time to have something joyful, you can get old awfully fast. And I think that's a good point, because in this industry, as well as a lot of small business industries, a lot of freelance industries, we're not talking about something that makes you rich. So we're talking about a lifestyle decision. And my family knows that all too well as well. And it can get you. But if the nice thing about the freelance thing is you can carve out the time in odd places, because you're not putting in the 9 to 5, and that can be refreshing, don't you think?
Right. Like just yesterday, almost every day we'll break in the afternoon for a half an hour and drive out to one of the beautiful fields that there are in the city, and we'll just lay down and stare at the sun, the clouds. We do that with Brownie. We take our dog out. So, I mean, that's kind of the rejuvenation that we need to keep on going. Your income is precarious when you're a freelancer. No year is the same as the last, or will it ever be the same as the next? Some years you're working on intensive projects, as I am this year. Other years you're just doing one job at a time. So, you have to really be flexible and roll with the punches. Some years are fun, and other years are challenging. But I think we really are suited to this kind of work, or we wouldn't be doing it. As you know, Benjamin, working with your family and juggling a lot of things at once, if you do not take care to find joy in every day, you just lose it. And a lot of people can't freelance because of that. It just becomes too much of a burden.
Well, yes, I agree. And I think that, it's kind of funny. You and I have talked about this before. Many people think that being a freelancer or being a small business person is a risky thing. And I'm not saying it isn't. Of course it is. And there's a lot of stress to that.
Right.
But in the economy we're in right now, I mean, you can go to school and you can get an accounting degree and you can work for a big company. And there's no security there either.
Right. And I think that it's good to know, everyone, that there's no security, period.
Right.
You just have to read the newspaper. I mean, we're in a much safer position than so many millions and billions of people in other parts of the world. It all comes down to who you are and what you do and what makes you happy and what makes you tick. I probably wouldn't have stuck with the freelancing if it weren't for Paul. I have to say, I think he's the stronger of the two of us in terms of routine. I think I might have dropped off and sought a job that was a little more, maybe not, I don't know. But I love what I do. And I mean, I still feel like a kid sometimes when the new fashion season comes up and I get to see what the runway shows look like. I mean, how many ways can you design a raglan sweater or a trench coat or all the variations on a theme? It's delightful. And so that fuels me too. I love culture. I love what goes on in it. I love textiles. I'm interested in a lot of other things besides knitting. And all of that feeds into my work too. I mean, my love of movies, I'm always looking for, garment shapes and details and stuff. And I like just noticing things, even if I don't use them. I'm Swedish by descent. My mother and grandmother were both Swedish, and I have a deep interest in all kinds of Scandinavian textiles and enamelware. I love vintage clothing. These are the things that keep freelance work interesting. Maybe for people who are not freelancers, their life is interesting because of these things too. But for me, they feed into my work and they kind of fuel the work.
So you said earlier that you are a prolific designer. And again, I don't think that's you being immodest. You are a prolific designer. You have been, I mean, I can't even count the number of garments you've done for Knitters Magazine, and you've worked with all of the editors out there. But you're also a published author. And I'd love to talk about you doing books. Can we talk about your first book?
Yeah, now I look back and I say, what were you thinking? You write a book called Designing Knitwear, and you had only been designing for 10 years. If I were to write that book again now, I think it would be totally different. But basically, it stands there, and it is a good template for a process and how I worked. And that book came out in 1990, and it's still in print. It's called Designing Knitwear, as many people know. Thanks to the folks at Leisure Arts, I've done a baby heirloom knits just recently. I've done a cable collection for them and also a book on warm weather knits, which was a lot of fun because I always love the summer season sweaters. Not everybody does, but I do. I think it's a challenge and very interesting to design for those off seasons. It's easy to design with a wonderful wool and for warmth or, you know, function, but to design a sweater that isn't for pure function is always fun. And then most recently, my book, Finishing School, was a real treat for me to do because everyone knows, and if you don't know by now, I love the finishing process, putting sweaters together and all the details that go along with that. And that was a book that got its name by Tricia Malcolm, who was my editor at Vogue Knitting and editor-in-chief par excellence there for many years. And it was a very fun book for me to do because I was sharing all the experiences that I have that make finishing a delight for me. I can't wait to put a sweater together, and I can't understand why other people don't feel that way. What is it? So that book was out there and is out there in order to inspire people to become more aware of that whole finishing aspect. But let me back up a little bit, Benjamin, because I was thinking about this, and I think that part of the way I've gotten into books is because I see myself as part of a long tradition of garment makers. I mean, I see myself in a previous life in one of those Paris ateliers with Madame Gray or Schiaparelli, you know, sewing in the back room and adding the details. I just love the notion of that. I say it in workshops to people. Being a garment maker is not just about knitting. And it's about the arc, the decision making, the construction, the actual knitting, and the finishing. All of these things that go into making garments are very important. And I feel that part of my duty as an author is to kind of convey that aspect of working with garments in the knitwear field. Because after all, it isn't just about knitting. The success of a garment has a lot to do with, does it fit you? Is it well done? Do you understand the knitting techniques? All of these things are a balancing act in order to create a beautiful garment. So that's kind of what has led me into this area of writing about it. And I do a regular column for Vogue Knitting as well.
And in your column, it's very much the same thing. This is still you talking about your sensibilities. There's absolutely no way for you to divorce the concept of knitting, designing, and shaping. It's all the same thing to you. It's all that part of that process.
Yeah, like for me as a knitter, I'm not just a knitter. You know, people say, oh, I love to knit, I'm a knitter. I'm not just a knitter, I'm a garment maker. And that includes accessories because I do a lot of accessories as well. And that kind of has led me to this new big project that I've been working on for a couple of years now, and that's a book for Soho, the people at Sixth and Spring, who also do Vogue Knitting. It's a book about fit. And it's funny because Tricia Malcolm suggested this topic to me many years ago before I did the Finishing School book, and I was totally overwhelmed at the thought. I just was like, oh my God, that is such a huge topic, and how do you address it? And I think I knew it was a huge process because I've worked, you know, in theater, I've sewn, I've also made, thousands of knitted garments. And I know what goes into making something fit well. And it isn't all about taking something in a little or letting it out, which is easy for sewers to do and not so easy for knitters who have to, plan ahead. But part of it is that people are not always aware of the variety of ways that garments can be altered and changed. For instance, if you're working on a raglan sweater has a diagonal line. Everyone knows it runs from the underarm up to the neck edge. Now, that diagonal line can fall anywhere on the neck edge. It can fall at right below the ear, or it can come right almost to the center chest. So that when you're making a raglan and you want it to fit well, there is no one raglan. There are thousands of them. So the way you shape a garment, a typical iconic garment like a raglan or a cap sleeve, you really need to understand that garment before you can really understand how to make things fit. So when I set out to write this book, I wanted the book to be a combination of both how do you look at your own body, how do you identify your features, your measurements, and how do you relate those to the garment that you want to make? This is a process.
Okay, so I understand that you're right. As I think about the concept of that kind of a book, a shaping and a fitting kind of a book, it sounds daunting to me.
Me too.
There's so many kinds of structures you have to take into consideration.
And so many kinds, and all the kinds of body shapes and types that there are, too.
That's exactly right. And then you've got to try to meld different knitting techniques and fabrics, which will do this thing. So how do you break that down? I mean, and I'm sure, knowing you, because you're the researcher you are, you also went out and did some research on fit.
Well, funny thing is, Benjamin, is that I'm always looking at clothing, on people. And not always on models. I mean, I do love, fashion, and much of fashion is presented on the non-average figure. But I do observe people, and I've looked online at sweaters people have made, and I've noticed that sometimes things don't fit because people just don't understand the concept. So how do you get into all of this? Basically, I just crept through it. And basically, how do I say this? I organized as much material and much explanation as I could about how to understand silhouette, how to understand measurement, how to apply measurement. And also, because I've had so much experience over the years, probably more than most people, because I have worked with a variety of different body types in the course of my careers, I knew that I knew something about these things that other people didn't. So I wanted to create some sweaters, too, some iconic classic sweaters that would demonstrate what these different types of garments were and what are the issues that you face when you're going to make a sweater. So, say you're a knitter who wants to make a raglan, but you know that you have measurements that are different from the measurements that are offered in the pattern. Well, how do you take that information, alter it so that the sweater fits you better? This is what I hope to, this process I hope to present to people so that it's a little more easy for them.
Obviously, there are things that I'm sure you've done in the book, like explain where to measure. What are the points, the natural points to measure? Because I think people get that wrong all the time. But it would seem to me that talking about fit in an agnostic way would be the real challenge of a book like this.
Yeah, well, I feel as if anyone should be able to wear anything they like and what feels good on them. I'm a very democratic person when it comes to clothing. I don't believe there's one way to wear clothes. If you like your things to be loose fitting, that's great. If you want them to be close fitting, that's great, no matter what your shape or size. But there is the element of how does something feel good? Fit is kind of a slippery topic. I gave it a lot of thought. For me, fit isn't a cultural norm. We don't need to look a certain way. We want to be comfortable in what appeals to us. So the culture presents us with a lot of, ways to look. And I just think knitters need to know how to manipulate patterns so that they look the way they want them to on themselves and also feel great. And that takes into account silhouette, measurement, ease, all of the things that are, you know, things that just have to be learned, that's all.
Again, such a big subject. I mean, so yes. many disciplines that you're going to put into this book.
And so many different kinds of sweaters, too. I really enjoy designing them.
Right. A lot of different disciplines that you've put into this book. So where are you with the process right now in this book?
Well, I'm almost done with all the sweaters. I have two crucial projects to finish. One of them I'm knitting myself, which is a rare thing. And another one I'm in the swatching stage trying to decide a color scheme. It's a very colorful, large project. And, you know, do you go with neutrals? Do you go with bright colors? I'm trying to find my way with a yarn that I've chosen. So that's always a lot of fun for me. Maybe I'll present two different ways of making the sweater in the book in terms of fabric. But most of the text is done, and I still have some text to write about the individual projects. And I'm looking forward to working with the book department again, which Diane Lampram, who's the art director and who designed my book Finishing School, can do no wrong in my mind. And she makes me look good.
Well, it's great to have that collaborative process here. Yeah. Just really quickly, and I want to step back here, but before we do that, when will this book be available?
Yes, there's no definitive title yet, but you can all be sure that it's a book about sweaters and fit and how to make them fit. And it's going to be available from 6th and Spring in fall of 2015, which is next year.
Which is great. So yeah. You can come back on the show in about a year and we can talk about your brand new book.
Oh, great. It'll be wonderful to have it behind me and be able to see people's reactions to it, too.
See how I did that, Barbara Hooligans? I just pinned her down to get her back on the show. She's gonna, and now
I
she
will.
Said yes, so she's got to do it. Yeah, it's going to be wonderful. I can't wait to have you back on the show so we can talk in length about your book and just go through it. I'll have a copy in my own hands when we go through it. One of the things you were talking about the collaboration. One of the things that I think that we missed early that I want to get back to is your process for learning, because you're a self-confessed, self-taught person.
And I only learn that way. You know, we all learn in different ways, but my dilemma is that I can only learn if I teach myself. So it's weird. I don't know why. And I taught myself how to knit, basically. I was taught, but then I followed through. And then I taught myself to draw. And I give a class in drawing illustration. Now people think they can't draw. That's absolutely not true. You can. Everyone can. It's just a matter of practice and applying yourself. And also, I learned how to design by myself, too, by trial and error and learning, you know, by doing things. And I think that other people learn from other people, and I wish I could have done that, but I'm just one of those people who has to sit down and absorb it all myself. So that's how I work. And I had to learn to work with other knitters, too, which was fascinating to me. And it's one of the joys of my work is collaboration. The women that I work with, I write an instruction. They have worked with me for so long. They know what I like and what I don't like. They can catch an error. They can understand how things might work better based on something we've done in the past. It's a wonderful collaboration. But I really do confess, Benjamin, to being totally self-taught.
Your process, you and I have spoken before and talked about it, reminds me a lot of Barbara Walker.
Oh, she's my role model. She totally is in this field. I want to feel as if what I do is well thought out, well executed, and error-free. And none of us are perfect. I mean, we all make mistakes, and that's good. It's humbling, and it's where you learn. And I always say to people, you learn more from the difficult things and the challenging things and the mistakes than you do from the things that come easy to you. But Bob, right away, right out at the outset of my career, I noticed Barbara Walker's books, how well-conceived they were and how her voice was strong and how she had spoke with a certain authority that was based on experience. And I felt that if I was going to speak with experience or design with clarity or with interest for other people, that I had to have the experience to do that. So I have forced myself to go where no man has ever gone, so to speak. I've gone to places I hadn't wanted to go just for the sheer experience of it. I've done work with yarns I didn't think I'd like, and I learned from them. I've done garments that I wasn't really curious about just to see how it was done and learn from that. And I feel sometimes as a designer that you need to constantly be venturing out into new territory to test yourself and test your reactions and your skills. And I think that's where some designers get caught, is that they find a niche where they're comfortable and they don't go where they don't like to go. I always go where I don't like to go, and that's where I learn. I also feel like you really, as a designer, have to get away from like and don't like. You can't have any likes and don't likes. You have to embrace everything and every possibility. An editor might love a yarn. You don't see what's in it, but you pursue it and you make something wonderful out of it. That's where your skill and your experience comes in, and also where you gain skill and experience. So I always feel that I learned early on that to have the kind of range that I've managed to have over the years is just by going to those places where I wasn't comfortable. Does that make any sense, Benjamin? I mean, I might not like a certain kind of pattern stitch, but then I work with it over and over again, and then I find out how it works, and then I can apply it in other places and in other ways that suit me.
It makes perfect sense, and I think the other thing that you said there is to take a kind of a yarn that maybe you're not fond of and let the yarn teach you something.
Right.
You are one of those fearless, I don't care about comfort zone, I'm a professional, I'm going to do this. And one of the places, we talked about this in the pre-interview, and I'm going to put you on the spot here. One of the places that you've been uncomfortable in an area that I think you've done well in is that move to being somebody that's not just a designer, but also a columnist and a real writer. Can we talk about your discomfort there a little bit?
Oh, yes. The only reason I could write Designing Knitwear is I had a wonderful editor, Christine Timmons. And really, I didn't know anything about writing, and she really helped me understand. I lived with a writer, but that's not the same thing. So I really struggled with it, and I still continue to struggle to write. I wanted to express myself. There were ideas that I wanted to share. I saw myself as a, and I still do see myself as a conveyor of ideas. I want to share experience and present things of curiosity to other people. But I found writing so terribly onerous. It was terrible, but I just kept at it. And, funny thing happened is sometime, I think it was actually during the beginning of finishing school, all of a sudden something happened in my brain, and it wasn't difficult anymore. And I just consider that such a blessing. Maybe there was this floodgate, something was blocked in my brain chemistry, and I couldn't, write. But as much writing as I did, I never enjoyed it. And now suddenly I have this gift of being able to enjoy writing. And thank goodness, because with the big project that I'm involved in now, it really makes it easier.
Well, I read your columns, and I love your columns. And the thing I like most about your columns is there's just enough Deborah in your column to make it personal and to be an example, but there's a lot of information you're conveying. It's concise but funny and interesting, and that's a hard balancing act to get to, and you're very good at it, Deborah.
I don't know. I can't I have no formula for writing. I mean, I think some people are less intuitive about it. I am just an intuitive writer. I don't have any skill in terms of structure or whatever. I try to be clear. I try to explain things as I would want them explained to me, And as far as funny goes, what is life without a little humor? We need a lot of it. And speaking of humor, I have to laugh because a few winters ago, I did a set of three hats for Tricia Malcolm. She always gives me wonderful freedom, as Rick Mondragon does also at Knitters. And she said, Deborah, do three hats for holiday. I had so much fun. One was kind of 20s inspired, and one was kind of a Scandinavian stocking cap. And the third one, which I knitted myself, was this wacky hat that was just, we called it the winged hat. And I took so much flack about that hat on Ravelry because people thought it was so odd, and I just enjoyed making something that was off the wall, you know, and it was a lot of fun.
You know, it's interesting. I remember when all that happened. I was still on social media. Of course, since then, I've gone on a social media diet that's been, you know, good for me. And we won't talk about that in this show. But I remember that happening. And I also remember your very kind of gracious, not taking it personally, fine for people not to like it, still enjoyed the project kind of an answer that you put out there. I think that's not only true, it shut it down. It was amazing.
Well, I don't care what anyone thinks about what I do. I know I do it the best I can. And I know that what I like to do is fun for me, and I hope it's fun for other people. And I think that we have to be thick-skinned about these things. I think that, you know, everybody has an opinion, but also we need to make room for everybody. And it was fun for me to get those reactions from people because sometimes I don't hear anything from anybody. So I don't care if it's bad. I just want to hear it.
Well, you're stronger than I am, and, you know, we won't talk about that. Well, let's actually do talk about another piece of strength and something that's happened to you recently. Of course, your book that you've been working on for the past, I think it's over 2 years now, had a slight bump as you were working on it for the past, I think, 6 or 7 months, and you've talked a little about it. Would you mind telling our listeners what happened and why your book got put on hold and what happened in your life?
Well, you know, we all have things happen every day, you know, and something goes wrong, you know, some days minute by minute. But last August, a year ago, I suddenly found out I had breast cancer, and I was right in the middle of this big project, and I was like, what? You know, this can't happen to me. I'm too busy, you know, and of course it happened to me. It can happen to anybody. And it was one of those things that you just stand back and say, oh my goodness, you know, what do I do now? So luckily in our culture, we're well protected, and hopefully everybody has resources and, you know, health insurance and good doctors. We hope that for everyone. It isn't always the case, but I was lucky, and I was a case of early detection, and I had always been pretty diligent because my mother had had breast cancer in the past. And even yet, knowing that, I was still surprised. And so I did my course of radiation and came out of it. The whole thing took about 6 months. And, you know, Benjamin, it wasn't a bad thing. It wasn't good that I got cancer, and it's never good when anyone's ill or has something to say like this. But it certainly gives you perspective and makes you appreciate what you have and the time that you have and the physical prowess that you have to do things. And so I feel now, as I do with many difficult things that I've encountered in my life, I'd like to share, you know, with everyone, keep up with your regular screening, whatever kind of screening you do, with your doctor. Find out what the best is for you based on your history and your you know, your age and your other health issues. But don't neglect your screening, because when it's a case of early detection, it is so much easier than when it isn't. So that's my words of wisdom. But I'm fine now.
No, thank you for sharing. Well, I know you are. I was going to say you're fine now, and it's great, and you sound great, and I've seen recent pictures, so I know you're looking great. I appreciate you sharing that with us. It's one of those things. This touches so many people.
Yeah.
And it's pretty hard for anybody not listening to not know somebody that's dealing with cancer at any given time.
Totally. Isn't it? It's almost chronic in our culture and maybe the world, you know? So we need to be on top of these things, you know, in order to keep going and enjoying our lives and doing what we need to do for other people as well as ourselves.
So much has been done for cancer treatment that, again, this early screening thing, this does not have to be a death sentence anymore.
No, not at all. Not at all. But it is easier when it's detected early, let's face it.
Yep, and I'm glad you came out of it, and I'm glad that you came through, and I know you had a good support system. I know your family was there. I'm sure Paul was there for you, too, and at the end of it, you came out with a, you know, maybe don't sweat the little stuff quite so much, right?
Exactly. Just like, you know, when you're building a library of skills and techniques as a knitter, you know, the more you know, the less anxious you are about what you're getting into, you know, just so such is life, right? We get experience and it helps us with other things that we have to face. So
you've always been so upbeat. I always loved talking to you because you're just always in a good mood.
Oh, no. Well, you know, I work at it, Benjamin. You know, all of us have challenges, and I have my grouchy times. But I think when you put a priority on what your goals are and what works for you and what you want to do and how you want to treat people, then those things are always much more supported by a positive outlook. So I try.
You do a great job. So I wanted to talk a little bit about your teaching, because this is kind of a fun subject for me. We're going to lead into Stitches East, but you're a great teacher. And yet I get the sense sometimes that you don't necessarily know that you're a great teacher. You are concise. You're clear. I think people love being around you. I think they feel empowered. What is your process to get ready for teaching?
Oh, my God, I'm such an imposter when it comes to being a teacher. I feel so wiggly-kneed, and getting up in front of a crowd is frightening for me. And then invariably, someone raises their hand in the first 5 minutes and says, "Where are you from?" with that accent. And so I'm always kind of jittery before I teach. And I don't teach that often. I consider myself primarily a designer, but then again, I want to teach because I have all this information that I want to share with people. You know, I want to demystify swatching, and I want people to love finishing, and I want people to, you know, get excited about garments and, you know, understand them a little bit more. So then that means you have to teach. And it's always fun for me, too, because after a class is over, I've learned so much from what people ask me. You know, people ask questions, and they have their own feelings about things. And truly, a teaching is as much learning as it is teaching. But I do get kind of scared before I have to do it, I have to admit. I'll be in Hartford this fall teaching my favorite subject. Yes, swatching. And
I was going to say, you've been with us before at Stitches East, and of course we love having you there. I stood at the back of one of your classes before, so I know your teaching style. I know how good you are and how much patience you have with people. For you just seem to enjoy the whole process. I get the whole butterflies. There's not a single time that I don't get up on stage at a Stitches, or even before I start recording an interview like this, that I don't get butterflies and even worse sometimes. It's what we do is not always the most comfortable thing in the world.
Right, exactly. And I always come away saying, "Oh, I forgot to say this," or and then I've taught side by side with other people, you know, in different venues. There are teachers there, like you know, Franklin Habit or Melissa Leitman. These are the people who are real teachers, and they really know how to. They have a million topics, and they know how to convey ideas. And you know, I go up and I hope I remember to say everything that I wanted to say. You know what I say, Benjamin? I say that as a teacher, I'm less of a teacher. I'm more of an inspirer. And that helps me be a teacher, because I feel like I go in, I show people what I do, I try to inspire them also to find their place as a designer or as a lover of knitting. How do you best manifest the thing that you love? That's what I hope to do when I teach. I want to inspire.
Well, I think you too, and I think the best of teachers do exactly that. It is an empowerment and an inspiration thing. When we do our jobs well, we are passing along the idea that, yes, you can. And I think it comes down to that is the primary thing that you do.
Yeah. And also, I like to encourage people to get out of their comfort zone. I mean, I call people, they're niche lovers, right? People who only knit socks, only knit shawls, only knit scarves. Only do one thing. And I say, you know, that's great, but you're a knitter and you're part of this tradition and you need to explore it a little more fully. You got to get into the dark corners, you know? And that's what I like to do. I like to edge people into places where they haven't been. And I think it's important to our industry and to our craft. You know, we have a responsibility to our craft. What do we do in our space and time to contribute to it? Knitting has given me so much in terms of pleasure and learning, and I want to give something back to knitting and to all the people who do it. So for me, it's a two-way street, and I like to nudge people out of their comfort zones. So I say, you know, well, you know, have you tried this? No. Why? Why not try this? Well, I don't like it. Why don't you like it? You don't know. You know, don't like and not like. Go, just go and be there and enjoy.
Oh, I completely agree. I think you and I have had the conversation. One of the things that I really look forward to is the opportunity on occasion, as much as possible, not to have an opinion about something that will keep you from future opportunities. I love when I get to that moment and I say, yeah, I don't have to have an opinion about that. Isn't that a beautiful thing? Because all of a sudden, I have not limited myself. I know. It's a thing that I'm trying to teach my kids, not to necessarily have an opinion about everything. I see a lot of stuff online where, you know, somebody clicks like or doesn't click like or, you know, on Ravelry where they click agree or disagree. And I keep thinking to myself, does everybody really have to have an opinion about everything? I really don't think so. I think you can look at it and go, well, okay, yeah.
Right, and that's so black and white, you know. I mean, here we true creativity and true human compassion and true love for what we do and other people exists in the space between like and don't like. All of that rich, juicy stuff that sometimes is hard to swallow is all about being in the middle and not having an opinion and doing it regardless, and loving it regardless, and loving someone regardless. I mean, we all know somebody we wish would change. We all know something that we wish was easier. We all want something that we wish we could have that we can't. But where do we live? We live in the space where we are. So becoming comfortable with those things is part of a process of that you apply to your craft, to your relationships with other people, to the books you read, to culture in general. You know, I think it's wise that you're talking to your kids about this.
Well, I think that the reason I'm talking to my kids about this, and I won't spend too much time talking about me, folks, I promise, is that we live in a social media culture where the anonymity allows people to have an opinion that is not based on any forethought, any notion of kindness, and you get a soundbite of information that you call news, regardless of where you actually got it, and you form an opinion and you become part of whatever it is out there that is the landslide of public opinion. And I consider that to be a dangerous thing. I consider that thoughtful people who are well-informed should always be part of a conversation that those people who are not as well-informed should simply listen to without participating in. And I'm not trying to be exclusionary about that. Mm-hmm. It's just that there are people that are better at certain things. And when they speak, I think it's better that people listen as opposed to have an immediate reaction on every word that comes out of their mouth, you know, that we look at some things a little more holistically. So, yeah, I am trying to do that. I think it's kind of important. And I know that's a vague kind of amorphous idea, but I think it makes for more well-rounded people.
Well, I live with a science fiction writer, so I've given this a lot of thought. And I think that, you know, there are some of us who have come up in the world, we've lived pre-internet. And there are those who have only lived with the internet. I also believe that we are in the rather primitive stages, like we call it social media now, but I also feel, as an optimist that I am, that possibly the kinds of communications that have started to evolve and open up as we get more involved in the internet in our lives are going to become a little more subtle as time goes on. And hopefully some of that will take care of the black and white, which is what I call it, you know, that sort of yin-yang where you know, it's an either-or situation instead of having the rich subtlety that falls between those two endpoints. But, you know, the internet is a place that's new to me because I spent most of my career as a print person, you know, working in print, working with editors, I still do. And I have not explored selling my designs or doing the kinds of design work that would, you know, would allow me to be a presence online. So that's something yet for me to explore. I'm interested in it, but I haven't had the time.
Well, when you get there, I have a technology website company. We'll talk.
Maybe all right. Sounds good.
All right. So while we were on the subject, and we'll get all past the philosophy of online and judgment.
Right.
So sorry for that, folks. We just had to take that little detour because this is one of those things that Deborah
and I agree
about.
Necessary detour, yes.
I think it was a necessary detour. So you mentioned earlier that you are joining us again for Stitches East this early October, just I think 6-7 weeks from now. We are so excited. To have you back.
Yes, I'm excited. I'll be teaching a class on swatching, which is always a fun class. And I always like to show people how much more there is to working a swatch than just a little tiny piece for gauge. You know, that's the least of it. And whenever I teach that class, people are always like, Deborah, I am going to swatch now. I really am. I say, okay. So I like being able to inspire people to do that.
Not just that. I mean, you're a great teacher. It's great for the students to have time with you. But I have to say, greedily, we all love hanging around with you. I mean, you sort of get our funny little family company, and everybody adores you, and you hang out with us, and we just have great conversations. It's just wonderful to be able to spend time with you. So,
and also, I've known you. I've worked with knitters. I think it was the second issue. How many issues are there now, Benjamin?
116.
Right, and I started on issue 2, so that shows how ancient I am in terms of longevity. I've always enjoyed. Working with Rick, he just always lets me run with the ball. I appreciate the kind of trust that he's given me, and I've enjoyed that immensely over the years. And when I'm done with this big book, I hope to be out doing more designing in magazines, because I've been a little bit busy with other things.
Well, you know, we will always, I mean, I think most of the editors out there would admit that, oh, you know, anytime you want back into our world, I think you're always be welcome.
Uh-oh.
You're a pro, and people love working with you. So we're coming down close to the end of the show, and I thought I'd ask you, do you have any shout-outs that you'd like to make to the Fiber Hooligan audience today, or just the world today?
Well, you know, I have to say, first of all, I wouldn't do what I do if it wasn't for the women I work with, and there are so numerous, and there have been so many over the years, who are now friends, not just coworkers. I want to thank all of them, because without them, I would not have the ability to do and explore as many kinds of things that I have done, or work on books or whatever. So you guys know who you are, and I love you. And all the editors that I've worked with, too many to mention, notably Rick Mondragon at Knitters and Tricia Malcolm at Vogue Knitting, have always been so supportive of my work and always let me run with the ball. What more can a designer ask? And no judgments, and just allow me to have some fun. And I always, always enjoy that. Uni Jang and Lisa Schroyer at Interweave have always been very supportive of my work. And all the yarn companies over the years that I've worked for, I've had so much opportunity to work with such a wide variety of products and learn so much from them. So, what can I say? I've just been lucky to work in an industry where there are so many wonderful people. I won't even try to mention names, Benjamin, because it's just too many.
It's completely, you did a good job there. I won't press you for it anymore. You were very gracious. No, I think that was a good small list, and I think you wrapped it up very well. All right, so final question. I always give all of my guests fair warning about this. Do you have any final words of advice to the Fiber Hooligans today?
Well, you know, what I always try to impart when I teach is that be more of a knitter. I always say, what do you know about your knitting? Can you say that you've explored the niches and the nooks and crannies of knitting? Go out there and be adventurous and do something that is new and exciting, and, you know, become an expert, and also go beyond being an expert into a place where you know nothing and start all over again. So that's my advice. Keep your sights fresh. don't become so much of an expert in anything that you can't find something new to explore and be a beginner at. So that's what's worked for me, and that's the experience that I'd like to share. And I'd also like people to look forward to my new book. I think that I've put so much time and effort into it. I'm really looking forward to people's reactions, and I hope it's a helpful book. So that's what I've got.
Well, that's wonderful. And you know, I really do appreciate your sensibilities and your words of advice for the Fiberhooligan listeners as you and I talk before. I believe that education should be a lifelong process, even when you're educating yourself. And I know you also believe that. And your book, I know this is the very first time that you've spoken about your book. You were gracious enough to share it with the Fiberhooligans first. We really appreciate that.
You're hearing about it first.
I'm going to hold you to the deal once it's out. We're hearing about it first here, folks. This was a scoop that we got here. But I'm going to hold you to that. I'm going to have you on next year when the book is out, and we're going to go through it cover to cover. Are you ready
Great.
For that?
I can't wait. Maybe I'll be fitting a sweater for you, Benjamin.
Oh, I could only be so lucky. Anyway, so I wanted to thank you so much for being so gracious with your time. It has been such a treat to have you on the show.
Oh, it's been a delight.
Thank you. I am lucky that I get to see you in a month and a half, and I am really looking forward to that.
Well, I am too, and thank you so much for having me on. I'm really thrilled that I could mention about the book first here and also, you know, just share some thoughts and have fun talking to you.
Again, thank you for being here with us today, and you have a wonderful week.
Thanks, Benjamin. You too. And all my best to all the knitters there.
Bye.
Bye.
That was the delightful and talented Deborah Newton. You can find Deborah's designs in many knitting magazines, including our own Knitters Magazine. Or you can head over to Ravelry and do a quick search in the patterns to see the amazing work that she's done over the past 30 years. And let's all be on the lookout for that book that's coming out next fall. Okay, you know what time it is.
And now it's time for State of the Hooligan with Tammy Burke.
I'd like to welcome back host of State of the Hooligan, moderator of Our Fiber Hooligans Rivalry Group, and administrator of Our Fiber Hooligans Facebook page to tell us all what's new and cool in the fiber arts world, our roving virtual reporter, my friend and fellow fiber hooligan, Tammy Burke. Tammy joins us again today from Boise, Idaho. Good morning, Tammy, and welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Benjamin. Happy Monday.
It just never is going to fail to tickle you, is it?
And you know what? We're going to talk about Stitches Midwest today, but there was a lot of people that had the same same experience when they heard it too. So there we go.
See, now I feel obliged in the next year, you know, to like change it.
We're not changing the music.
Oh, I think we are, Tammy. And I think I'm not boring you when we do.
Oh no.
It's going to be awesome. So I'd love to say that like I missed you terribly, but you know, I saw you 2 weeks ago. I mean, I always miss you, but I saw you 2 weeks ago. Wasn't it awesome? We got to hang out a little more this time. It was really awesome to see you.
It was. And getting to meet your wife and the sons was awesome. They got put to work.
They did. I have such ugly children, don't you think?
No, I don't think so. I don't think anybody's children are ugly.
No.
But certainly not yours.
No, actually, it was kind of a fun show for kids. I remember I saw Stacy over at the collage booth. She brought her daughter and both her kids, and you know, they did a great job. And Christy brought her two kids, and I tell you what, I was so impressed by that Austin. What a hard worker.
Yes, you know, he is. He's awesome.
Not that Christy's daughter didn't do a beautiful job, but that boy, you know, he was toting around boxes in a 3-piece suit. You got to respect that.
Lexi was so overworked that a lot of times when I saw her expression was of confusion, and I totally was right there with her. This is my first time at Stitches Midwest, and a lot of times I probably had the same face.
No, but it was a good show. It was fun hanging out. Again, I missed you. Is it okay? Can I ask you online how Superman is doing?
He is doing wonderful. The surgeon was really impressed with how well he's healing. He's had a little bit of cabin fever, so I took him out of town on Monday, which turned out to be a little bit more of an adventure than I needed. But because I'm exhausted now. But he's doing really good. Well, and I'll tell him you asked about him.
Please do. Please let him know that all of us Fiber Hooligans have him in our prayers and our hearts. So, yeah, it's a terrible thing that had to happen. But, you know, and I was so scared that you weren't going to be able to join us. I know, selfish. I'm just selfish, Fiber Hooligans. I'm selfish. I want Tammy all to myself. But,
yeah,
well, I mean, who doesn't, again, I've said it many times, there can never be enough Tammy, you know?
Well, he missed me, so he was grateful when I got home. That I think it was a good break because I was kind of, you know, the irritant kind of nurse, the one that's always there in your face. What do you need? What do you need? Let's do this. And he needed a break from that.
I'm going to refrain from saying something like, that sounds like a typical marriage. Yeah, I'm going to refrain from saying something like that.
So he missed me when I got back, and he was really happy to see me. That's all good. It's all good.
It's always all good. And, of course, we were happy to see you. So you're back. It was great to have you at the show. I hope you've recovered by now. We had 2 weeks off. And I got to ask, how are you doing personally? Did you get any knitting done? You've relaxed. Have you de-stressed? Have you processed the show?
I have continued to work on something. I was working on a T-shirt, a knitted sweater that's a T-shirt shape while I was there. And I got some excellent help from Rick Mondragon that was on our last episode. Helped me with knitting backwards.
Cool.
Which is, normally you knit from right to left. This was knitting from left to right, which is perfect in those situations where you just have a few stitches and just having to flip the thing around back and forth is irritating. So like short rows on a sock, I'm above the armpits on a T-shirt. I was working on the left-hand side and then the right-hand side of the top. His advice was really helpful, and I just seemed to zoom through it after he helped me with it. So that was huge.
That's great. Well, before we get to your segment today, and I don't know what you're going to, I have a feeling I know what you're going to talk about because I have a feeling you were just at a Fiberfest. What'd you think of Deborah Newton? Isn't she awesome?
Yes, I think she is a wonderful personality, and I can see why you needed to have her on the show.
Yeah, you know, again, I would have had her on the show any time in the last 6 months, but, you know, she was going through the cancer thing, which is, you know, it's just too many people are going through that. You and I got to sit down one day, Tammy, and try to figure out how to end this whole cancer thing, okay?
I think we can do that.
Okay, I think we can too. It sounds like a hooligan task.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm glad you enjoyed her. She's wonderful, and I'm really looking forward to seeing her at East in about 6 weeks, and I can't wait to introduce you to her.
Wow, is it only 6 weeks? Oh my goodness. I'm going to have to start packing again.
You're not getting out of it. You have to come to these shows.
Yes, Mavis finds plenty for me to do. I can't not go.
No, you can't. All right, so let's get into the segment. I always look forward to your report. So I know what you're going to talk about, but I'll ask anyway. So what do you got to talk about this week?
Well, let's recap stitches.
Well, okay. It is, you know, folks, Fiber Hooligans, you should know, it's always a little strange for me to recap one of our shows on Fiber Hooligan, because I love the show to be not so much about us, me, but it was a very big and kind of interesting show, and it was Tammy's first Stitches Midwest, and so if she wants to talk about it, I am going to get out of the way. I guess the first thing I'll say is a preface is, isn't that a beautiful hotel?
Yes, that is beautiful. I don't think you've picked a bad place to have one, but, you know, this is the second Stitches event that I've gotten to go to. The ones that I've been to so far, West and Midwest, both of them are outstanding.
All right, so let's do this. Let's take us through Tammy's eyes. What did Tammy see, and how did it go for her? Let's take Tammy's Stitches take. That's what we'll do.
Well, Tammy's take was kind of a whirlwind. It started Wednesday. We had the staff meeting, which was great for me because I got to see who all is XRX staff. And people may not realize it's not a huge team.
No.
There's just a handful of people that are running that entire show.
We get together on Wednesday night. We just started doing this not so long ago. We get together on Wednesday night in either my room or Mavis's room, have a drink or two, non-alcoholic and alcoholic, and we just talk about what's coming up, things that we need to think about, and we get to know each other, and then we just hang out until people wander off and do their own thing. It's always kind of a fun thing.
Well, as the newbie on the team, which is cool, I got to meet everybody, so anybody that gave me directions, I knew that we were working together, and their advice, you know, wasn't, how do I say it nicely, over the air. It was a best laid plan, you know, that this is the experienced team. I had been given direction at West that I didn't understand because it was from somebody that I didn't realize was on the team and that they were actually watching out for me. So until I had met them and been introduced to them, that was really helpful to be part of that meeting.
Well, this is something you're going to find is a recurring theme with XRX. We do product really well. We do communications lousy. And so if we can possibly screw something up by not explaining it to somebody, we're your guys, really. Yeah.
And I think it made everything in the end run more smoothly for everybody.
So what were some of the highlights of the show for you?
Well, this was the first time that I got to meet a lot of people. I got to meet Elaine Rowley, the R in XRX, as you always introduce her. I got to spend a lot of time with Rick Mondragon, like I said earlier, not just with the knitting advice. I got to meet Franklin Habit, which was way cool.
Well, and you talked in our show, our State of the Hooligan segment with Rick Mondragon last time. You talked about looking forward to Franklin's talk. And you went to Franklin's talk on Thursday night. What did you think? Was it as funny as I told you it would be?
Oh, my goodness. Some of those outfits that they are designing back in the day, the little boy's outfit with the pom-poms on it was incredible. But then, you know, it just wasn't knitting or crocheting or anything. It was everything. It was metalsmithing, tissue paper work. You know, just a lot of crafting that you wouldn't imagine today somebody would be publishing.
And his delivery, it was magical. The guy has the timing of a stand-up comedian, but he's a researcher, like a historian, and he combines it to such great effect. I mean, so right away, bang, after Thursday night, we were off and running, and people were in a good mood. I'm so glad he's joining us again out east to do the same thing on Thursday night, because that's going to be, it's a great way to start, folks. Honestly, not seeing Franklin after the market on a Thursday night is, you know, you're missing out. You have no idea what you're missing.
If that does not fill up, I'm going to fill up those seats myself, because it's definitely something that you don't want to miss if you have an opportunity to go. I understand he's not going to be doing it at every Stitches event, so get there when it is presented so that you can enjoy it.
Yep. Okay, so the next day, of course, you had to go to work. It was a long day, busy Friday, lots of people into the market. And what were some of the highlights on Friday?
Friday started early for me. I was at the registration desk trying to assist people. I think I was basically there to helping direct traffic, which is good for me. I like telling people where to go.
I've decided not to comment on that.
That's a good decision.
I think it is a good decision. Yep.
But I wasn't there for very long. I was back in the booth. We were proud to be there to offer the new book to people, Judith Shangold's Weave, Knit, Wear. I hope I have that right.
You got it right.
Oh, good. That is a beautiful book. The photographs, the drawings, the techniques explained. You know, I'm not a weaver. I offered it to a friend of mine here in Boise who is a weaver, and she melted. I mean, who wouldn't, even if you hadn't, you know, ever done any weaving before? It's an awesome put together product. I think people that are weavers might, you know, need to look at this and get a copy of it for themselves, perhaps at East.
Well, I have a feeling we'll have one or two copies there. Yes.
A couple. Yes. And got to meet her also, as well as Anna Zilberg, who I'd never expected to get to meet. I understand she's a recluse.
Well, you know, she's, I think that's somewhat simplistic, but yeah, she lives very solitary and intellectual and thoughtful life. Let's put it that way.
Well, the cool thing is that she was there to share with us. So I got to watch her from over her shoulder, kind of how she spoke with people in the booth, as well as other teachers. Myra was there with her book that we introduced at West. So many of the teachers, you know, stopping by and to share a few minutes with people in person, not necessarily as part of a class. That's a treat for me, too.
Right. And so, Farber Hooligans, in case you don't know, Tammy comes to work for us to do, well, everybody wears a lot of hats, and so we move around as need. But her primary responsibility is to help Karen Bright in the XRX Knitters Magazine, XRX Books booth on the floor itself. And you do a great job because you know our products so well. And a lot of our authors do demos and book signings in there. So there's a lot of activity in our booth.
It's a busy place.
It is a busy place, yeah.
What I really love is when classes have let out and people are coming through and they're wearing the projects that they've made lately. You know, you can always recognize an adult surprise jacket. There's a lot of Clapity shawls that walk past. You know, you can name the different projects that you've seen.
The swing jackets from Swing Swagger Drape, you see those all the time, too.
A lot, yeah.
Yeah.
The swirl jackets are really popular. You see a lot of those. So it's always interesting to see what everybody's been working on lately.
Yeah. So that takes us through Friday during the day. And, of course, Friday at night, we headed off to the fashion show. I thought Rick and Fontel nailed the fashion show. I thought it was as tight as it's ever been. I thought it was exciting and dynamic. I thought it was great.
We should mention who Fontel is, because I know a lot of people hadn't recognized her, didn't know who she was.
Right. Fontel Jones from a great yarn in Everett, Washington.
Yes.
Right, it's Everett. Right. So they come to Stitches. Great Yarn has been coming to Stitches forever. And so Fontel came and started helping Rick do commentary. And it's so great. First of all, she has a great voice. Second of all, she and Rick have a great rapport. And third, she knows the fibers, she knows the designers' names, and she's able to occasionally add something about, okay, you know, if you're looking for a quick knit, and she can put a perspective on the knit from, you know, a seasoned yarn store owner. And so the commentary ends up being great, a real understanding yeah. of the nature of the knit or crochet.
Exactly. And when she announces that there's a prize to go home with somebody and announces their name, they're shrieking in the audience.
There is, yeah. It's you know, again, we're going to probably take a long time on this segment, but when the fashion show happens, sometimes almost a third of the garments the suppliers give us the kits for. So you see a garment and they will give away the entire kit for that garment. That happens. I've seen as many as 30 or 35 kits go out in the evening, and just, you know, there's usually a lot of fun when that happens.
Well, the production itself, having 90 different outfits shown, those gals are changing their clothes every couple of minutes just to make sure that it goes quickly so that people aren't detained from getting to the banquet dinner afterward. It just zooms. It goes quick.
Yes, it really does. Anyway, so it was a great night. The fashion show was hot. It was tight. It was funny. There's a great rapport. We went. We did the fashion show dinner. There were some more prizes given out. And then later, I missed most of it, but then it was Marley's pajama party. And I know you helped
yes.
with that. Was it a good show? Was it a good party?
Yes. There can be a little bit of improvement because the acoustics in that area where the party was a little bit tough to hear Marley without a PA system.
Yeah.
But everybody that participated snuggled in close so that they could hear what was being said. I think all of those people really enjoyed it. There was a couple of people that I met for the first time that are regular Marley listeners, but also listen to us Fiber Hooligan podcast also. So that when they saw me, they knew who I was. You know, just a couple of those people said hello at that event. So that was pretty cool. I went in my minion hat. a purple minion hat.
So, of course, the next day is Saturday, and another big day in the market. Anything fun happened in the market that you wanted to call attention to?
Oh, my goodness. Kristen Omdahl has new fabric that will be appearing on an Erin Lane bag. That was pretty awesome, getting to see the fabric samples. I got over to the Namaste booth and got my Halos of Hope snapped to it.
Oh, snap bag. Yeah, those
yes.
are great.
Oh,
yeah.
snap. Yes. Blue, but I got them, and they're handy, and they benefit Halos of Hope. They also, on Sunday, Halos of Hope raffled off Betsy's scarf.
And it was awesome, right? We made some money on that, too, so that was just totally... I missed it. I was in the middle of a meeting, and so I actually missed the raffle. Yeah, no, I was terrible. I missed it, but it was great. A lot of good PR there at that time.
Good.
Yeah, and so... So we went through all the day, and then, of course, we got to the student banquet on Saturday night. And, folks, in case you haven't heard about the Stitches Midwest student banquet, it got out of control.
It did not. It got fun.
Well, I'm not saying it wasn't fun. I'm just saying that it departed from the usual thing. I mean, the audience was doing the chicken dance. Rick was doing the hustle. There was a Catholic priest doing a burlesque number. I mean, it really kind of got out of hand. And if you're interested, go up to our Knitting Universe Facebook page and take a look at some of the videos. But I think it was the best student banquet we ever had.
That was because it was the first time I was there. Just kidding.
It's probably the case. Everything gets fun when you're around, Tammy.
Oh, yeah, all right.
Yeah, that's right.
Anyway.
So you know what happened on Friday and Saturday that I missed?
What'd you miss?
I missed both podcaster meetups.
Wow, I'm sorry.
You were there.
There was some. I dropped in for a minute because I was worried about the booth being overwhelmed while I was gone. But I passed out Fiber Hooligan stitch markers on Friday, as well as some of my own that I had made that said "State of the Hooligan" with Tammy Burke. And I think that people saw those and they were like, "Oh, Benjamin's program." So I'm glad that people are hearing you and learning more about the folks in the fiber industry that you have on the program. Saturday I went with some things from Marley. I'm sorry that you missed it. I got to meet Paula from Knitting Pipeline.
I actually had, on Saturday afternoon, just before the student banquet, I ran into Paula and Boston Jen, and we had a nice conversation, little talk, and I apologize, but they're wonderful. And such great podcasters.
They are. And, you know, they're loving everything that they can find, everything they can get a hold of. They're, like me, completely overwhelmed with everything in the marketplace. People bring so much to offer there. It's, you know, there's no other word to describe it than awesome. And I say that too often, but it's awe-inspiring seeing everything that is brought and marketed there.
Did you get a chance to see Stephen B. and Stephen West while you were at the show?
I saw them from afar, but everybody wanted to get up there to see the Stevens. So they walked past, and I said, rock on, and Stephen B. agreed with me. And I got to say hello from afar, and that was it.
So Sunday came and went. Sunday's this lower show, then we give the cash prize away, and then we start packing up. It's a long day. Everybody's tired. But I got to ask, did you do any stash acquisition yourself while you were at the show?
Yes. I actually almost got myself in trouble because I had no idea how I was going to get all of that home. I've learned a big lesson. I am never doing carry-ons only ever again. I'm gonna check a bag. It's gonna be a big one. It's gonna go half empty and come back. I'm pretty sure it's gonna be full.
Well, so overall, you rate the show out of, you know, between a 1 and a 10. How would you rate the show?
I had a 12 experience. It was beyond all my expectations.
Okay, well, it's good. That's good. I'm glad you were happy, and I'm glad, you know, you do so much work, and then, you know, it's these are never-ending days, folks, and Tammy's wonderful. She's a great addition to the team. We love having her with us, and so now we got, you know, a month and a half to recuperate before we go to Stitches East, and so you're ready to hit this again, right?
Yes. We're already hearing about so many new people. For instance, Deborah Newton, more people to meet, more adventures to have. Hartford, Connecticut. I've never been there. let's rock. Let's get.
I'm going to take you one night. We're going to go out, and there's this great, I think it's called the Steam City. It's this multi-level place, really interesting place, and they serve a drink, I swear, called Naughty Nurse Ale. We're going to have a couple Naughty Nurse Ales, okay?
I'm going to be in trouble.
Yes, you are going to be in trouble.
Yay!
All right, well, is that all you have for this week?
Yes.
All right, well, you know, thank you for another great segment, Tammy. And I know this, Fiber Hooligans, you know, please, we apologize for having this segment be extra long. But, you know, Stitches Midwest was kind of a big thing for all of us. And we had a great show, and it was very positive, and there's just a lot of good stuff. So please forgive us for spending a few extra minutes talking about it. So thank you again for another great segment, Tammy. And we'll look forward to hearing from you in 2 weeks.
Yes. Enjoy the Labor Day weekend, everybody. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. That was Tammy Burke, host of State of the Hooligan and admin of Our Fiber Hooligans Facebook page and moderator of Our Fiber Hooligans Ravelry group. For those of you who may have missed anything in this podcast, I invite you to join us in one of our groups. Tammy does such a great job of making sure we answer questions and provide links and follow-up to anything you may have heard on the show. Next week, we'll be taking a break for Labor Day, but in 2 weeks, we'll be back with Karin Scassell, the president of Scassell Collection, Inc. The Scassell Collection has been supporting local yarn shops as a wholesaler of high-end yarns and needles for over 27 years. Scassell is the sole North American distributor for Addy Turbo line of hand-knitting needles and accessories, as well as Zitron, Haiku, Artfelt, and Schappel yarn lines. As a family-owned and operated entity, they strive to provide top-notch customer service, world-class products, and cutting-edge designs. Karin has been involved in the artistic crafts industry her entire life. Prior to taking over Scassell, she taught classes in glass fusing and lamp work, clothing design, sewing, knitting, crochet, and pottery painting. She is also the leading authority in Artfelt in North America. She was the first to experiment with the paper and through trial and error has discovered many amazing possibilities using the paper as a base for felting. She is currently working on an Artfelt book and has been teaching classes and doing demonstrations throughout the United States. Although her resume and credentials are impressive, it doesn't do justice to this remarkable and generous lady who has done so much to support the entire fiber arts industry. I can't wait to have her on the show so you can learn more about Karin and her company. I also want to make sure that you know that I'm eager to hear from you. You can email me questions, recommendations, critiques, and feedback at benjamin@fiberhooligan.com. And that includes suggestions for guests or cool things you'd like Tammy to talk about in her segment. If you want to email Tammy directly, you can do so at tammy@fiberhooligan.com. I don't promise to respond to every email or message, but I do promise to do my best to read them all. If you ask a really great question or have an inspired idea, I may even read your email on the podcast. If you're following us on iTunes, we have moved. You can find us now at fiberhooligan.com/iTunes. And since we're at a new channel up there on iTunes, I'd appreciate it if you'd leave a comment if you like the show. I'd like to thank Prime Publishing and AllFreeKnitting.com for their sponsorship of Fiber Hooligan. I'd also like to thank my editor, Christine Weir, as well as Simone, Caitlin, Chris, Keith, Stuart, and the rest of the gang at Prime Publishing for all their help. I'd like to thank my guest, Deborah Newton, for being so gracious with her time and for talking about her upcoming book for the first time here on our program. I'd like to thank Tammy Burke for everything she does on and off the show. I'd like to thank Darn Good Yarn for sponsoring today's show. And of course, I'd like to thank all of you for listening. Well, that's our show, Fiber Hooligans. As we slide on out of here today, I'd like to wish you all a glorious week. Remember, the only thing better than being creative is being kind to each other. The good news, you can do both. Thank you for spending this time with us. We'll see you in 2 weeks for another edition of Fiber Hooligans.